This is my favorite book in the world. Peace is every step. It's what got me on this path. And I wanted to read a passage called The Dandelion Has My Smile. In a few short weeks, we will have dandelions everywhere, and we'll see them as noxious weeds. And perhaps after this reading, you might look at them a little differently. If a child smiles, if an adult smiles, this is very important. If in our daily lives we can smile, if we can be peaceful and happy, not only we, but everyone will profit from it. If we really know how to live, what better way to start the day than with a smile? Our smile affirms our awareness and determination to live in peace and joy. The source of a true smile is an awakened mind. How can you remember to smile when you wake up? You might hang a reminder, such as a branch, a leaf, a painting, or some inspiring words in your window or from the ceiling above your bed, so that you notice it when you wake up. Once you develop the practice of smiling, you may not need a reminder. You may smile as soon as you hear a bird singing or see the sunlight streaming through your window. Smiling helps you approach the day with gentleness and understanding. When I see someone smile, I know immediately that he or she is dwelling in awareness. This half smile, how many artists have labored to bring it to the lips of countless statues and paintings? I am sure the same smile must have been on the faces of the sculptors and painters as they worked. Can you imagine an angry painter giving birth to such a smile? Mona Lisa's smile is light, just a hint of a smile. Yes, even a smile like that is enough to relax all the muscles in our face, to banish all worries and fatigue. A tiny bud of a smile on our lips nourishes awareness and calms us miraculously. It returns us to the peace we thought we had lost. Our smile will bring happiness to us and those around us. Even if we spend a lot of money on gifts for everyone in our family, nothing we buy could give them as much happiness as the gift of our awareness, our smile. And this precious gift costs nothing. At the end of a retreat in California, a friend wrote this poem. I have lost my smile, but don't worry, the dandelion has it. If you have lost your smile and yet are capable of seeing that the dandelion is keeping it for you, the situation is not too bad. You still have enough mindfulness to see that the smile is there. You only need to breathe consciously one or two times and you will recover your smile. The dandelion is one member of your community of friends. It is there, quite faithful, keeping your smile for you. And so, dear friends, when all of those dandelions start popping up and you're annoyed by all of that because they're making your lawn look so ratty, think of them as smile keepers. Something happens. So how did you feel during that pause? Were you thinking, okay, what happens next? Why is the talk going like this? Did he have a stroke or something? A big episode of stage fright? Did you notice your desire to want something to happen, to move forward, to solve something, make something happen? Welcome to your frog nature. This is demonstrated in the following poem by Thich Nhat Hanh, which I believe is in all of your inserts, Froglessness. The first fruition of the practice is an attainment of froglessness. When a frog is put on the center of a plate, she will jump out of the plate after just a few seconds. If you put the frog back again on the center of the plate, she will again jump out. You have so many plans. There is something you want to become. Therefore, you always want to make a leap forward. It is difficult to keep the frog still on the center of the plate. You and I both have Buddha nature in us. That is encouraging, but you and I both have frog nature in us. That is why the first attainment of the practice, froglessness, is its name. And the same author, Thich Nhat Hanh, was obviously the person who wrote the story, or who experienced the story of the hermits on the well. And you can see the influence of that. At the beginning of the story, he's a very froggy boy, isn't he? He has this ambition, he has this plan, he's going to see the hermit. And after he has sort of deflated and sad, and his froggy nature has been deflated, then he finally meets the hermit. So how many times have we missed our hermit, our source of wisdom? How many times have we been full of our frogginess, leaping ahead and then again and again? All these lily pads, they seem inadequate, and this other one looks inviting, so there we go, we hop to that lily pad and then another, restlessly looking, but never seeing. Driven, it's a great word for this. We are being driven in a vehicle by our frog nature who doesn't want to stop for gas or directions. And there's a word for the type of meditation that we often do called shamatha. Shamatha means stopping. This whirlwind world is upon us, and while this froggy tendency we have has always been with us, we have a culture that promotes our frogginess. Nothing is more demonstrative of this than our blitz of electronic media. When we have nothing to do, we check out an email, send a text, check NPR, make a call, check CNN, check ESPN, read a paragraph or two in a magazine, read a paragraph or two in a website, microwave something, eat it mindlessly, check our email, check our other email, retrieve our voicemail, reheat the coffee, scan the newspaper, check our to-do list, eat a donut, paste, text again, check our email, surf the web, pick up a few clothes, see what's going on cable. Let's stop for a moment. I think one of our lost arts is to do nothing. I mean, to actually see nothing as something to do. For nothing is not this great void or wasted space. The state of nothing is where we can meet ourselves and perhaps know ourselves in a way we have not considered. In this busy world, we have become human doings. Perhaps we should explore what it's like to be human beings. We can embrace shamatha and experience the absence of this madness, this driven frogginess. The treadmill we are running on doesn't seem to be taking us anywhere. And often all we're doing is running from ourselves. Self-knowledge does not come so much as from driving in as it does from backing off. Less from forging ahead and more from letting go. So let's contrast the doing minds and the being mind. The doing mind is swept away by immediate judgment, aware, and perhaps fearful of the differences it sees between ourself and the other. The being mind lets things be and let us observe before reacting. The doing mind wants to get going and is concerned with our past, our regrets, and the future, our to-do list and our projects. The being mind, in contrast to getting going, wants to get staying, just to rest in the present moment. The doing mind is impulsive, seeing all these suggestions that come to us as thoughts, as urgent commands. The being mind sees thoughts as mental events, as suggestions only to be reflected on. The being mind does not believe everything it thinks. The doing mind is often acting out of avoidance and fear. And the being mind is reflecting and accepting, taking a while to see what is what. The doing mind is so often automatic. The being mind is more intentional. I often attend meetings at Children's Hospital, and at the hospital, I tend to get there around 6:45, shifts are 7, and I see everybody rushing in to the hospital. And I know that they have plenty of time, but it looks like everybody's in this mad sprint. And I wish that they could just kind of slow down. I want to take them and say, you don't have to go that fast. You can take this slower. Even if they were in a hurry, and I know because of how their shifts change that most of them aren't, even just taking that extra 5 minutes to get to work might be good. And maybe by the time they got to their floors and their stations, they'd be more aware for their patients and their families and their coworkers. And I see kids walking into exam rooms. I worked as a developmental behavioral pediatrician, and they can't let go of their handheld games. They're walking in with their handheld games. And I see people on the roads weaving in and out of traffic, way over the speed limit, not caring what that might be regarding danger or the stress on the environment. And nearly every day I see someone who would love to meditate. Oh, meditation's a great thing, but I'm just way too busy. There are frogs everywhere. So I wanted to give also in your handout, in your flyer, a little thing that I have tacked on my wall in my office above my desk. It's these four checkpoints that Thich Nhat Hanh has brought forward about how we might be able to act with our being mind, with our Buddha nature instead of our frog nature, in the concept called wise view. The first checkpoint is, am I sure? Something happens, am I sure? Often we are caught up in the moment and we make mistakes. And Thich Nhat Hanh has often said that with perception, there is deception. Our frog nature needs to jump to conclusions, pun intended. The classic story is that we can see is when we walk through a forest and we see a coil and we immediately see it as a snake, and then we find out that it was merely a rope. And this scenario is really obvious, but many of the time we have this enormous frog reaction and we continue to see things as snake and we refuse to reevaluate or to look deeper. We see the coworker who didn't get the report done as lazy, and the friend who passed us on the street as inconsiderate, and the politicians on the other side as cold-hearted, and Chicago Bears fans as deluded. And the list goes on and on. It's not that we can keep ourselves from making judgments. We will always make judgments. While I have been teaching my mindfulness-based stress reduction classes, and that's what my present class has sort of evolved out of, they came upon this principle called non-judgment, and I always had a problem with that. I liked the idea of called mindfulness of judgment, and because they needed seven things, I replaced it with froglessness. And it wasn't until after I reflected on this a little bit that I realized that froglessness is the characteristic that people would call non-judgment. To be swept away by your judgment is frog nature. To reflect is allow judgment to become partner in our actions, not a bully. And therefore, we sit with our froglessness and reflect. The second checkpoint, what am I doing? We should act mindfully, and our actions should be thoughtful, kind, and appropriate. Often we say things that are not true. Often we do things according to our own agenda rather than the greater good. Do our actions and words help? Even if they're true, do they help? It may be the frogless thing to say or do nothing and just allow things to be. This is really true in meetings, isn't it? People have this idea that they have to kind of say something or else they're not really participating. The third checkpoint is hello, habit, energy. Our ingrained ways of doing things, our long held patterns, are easy to once again fall into. How much of what we might say or do is the result of our automatic actions? We have used them before. Maybe they were even successful then. We will most likely be wise, however, if we look at every moment as a fresh occurrence. We can only do this when we train to see that our habit energy has often insidiously hijacked the train. And the fourth checkpoint is called bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is loosely translated as the true heart and mind of love. It is the wellspring of kindness. It is the hub of connection. It is the source of love. Many people who come to the path that I'm on and have noticed that I and others have taken this contemplative path and they want to become clearer about how they see the world and how they are doing things. It's a great idea and it works. While it's true that the contemplative life leads to better decision-making, it is also apparent the further you go along that the answer, the one answer, is impossible. There's a nice Chinese saying I like to use. To be uncertain is uncomfortable, but to be certain is ridiculous. We are all just taking our best guesses. They're better guesses if you live a mindful and frogless life, but their guess is just the same. So when given a lot of choices and you're not exactly sure and you need to make that sort of thing, you often try to dig and dig and dig for more information. Sometimes more information is not really there. I've found many people who are used to meditating, instead of digging for information, will pull out their cushion and sit for 15 minutes and make a lot better choices. When in doubt, choose the kinder option. When in doubt, follow your bodhicitta. Will you sometimes make the wrong decision and maybe even seem foolish? Sure, that'll happen. But if we all row in the same direction, the better off we are. The more we extend and open our bodhicitta heart, the more wonderful the world will be. All of this, I appreciate, takes practice, but it is all doable. Once Thich Nhat Hanh was feeling a little frustrated in a large crowd. He was trying to do walking meditation and was having difficulty. He was actually in the city of Prague and there were a lot of people around. He was popular and he was trying to figure out which way to go and how to do this walking meditation. And he said, this is ridiculous. He says, I give up. I can't do this. I can't lead this meditation. I'm going to let the Buddha do it. And so he opened up and he had his Buddha nature come out, and that's how he led the walking meditation. And you all have Buddha nature. Every single one of you, whether you believe it or not, you all have Buddha nature, and everyone around you has Buddha nature, and even your old weird uncle has Buddha nature, and even Scott Walker has Buddha nature. Everyone has Buddha nature. So perhaps when we're tired or frustrated or we're not sure what to do and we can't make that decision, maybe we can drop by and say, I'm tired, I'm confused, I'm weary, I'm just going to let the Buddha do it. And perhaps maybe you'll make more and better decisions that way. We all wish to be better people, better parents, and better partners, better employers and better workers, better teachers and better students, and better citizens and friends. It starts with taking a little time. It starts with that froglessness. Because that reactive mind has not always treated you so well. Take time to smell the flowers. Take time to taste the coffee. Take time to see the sunset and the full moon. Take time to hear the spring birds. Take time to see the eyes of the child, even the 80-year-old ones. The best news that Gautama Siddhartha told us is that we are all Buddhas. So maybe we should start acting like one. Be awake. Be alive. Be.